It hadn't occurred to me until just now when I went to look, because I knew, not that Neil hasn't won plenty of races in recent years, but I knew it had been a while since he had won a graded stake. And we won't even tell them how long, Neil, but the thing that's amazing to me, that all of your graded stake wins have come at Keeneland. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We like winning at Keeneland. It's fun. That's home.
Well, yeah, but it's okay to win a stake at Churchill, too, or at Fairgrounds.
Well, we've been beating a nose in some graded stakes at Churchill.
Well, delighted for, not just for you, but obviously for Mr. Lothenback. And this is a terrific win with a filly that you just never, you know, you never gave up, you know, thinking that, you know, she had these, you know, these kinds of performances in her. I mean, talk about the year and, you know, getting a big graded stake win for Bell's the One.
Well, you know, after the Acorn, she didn't run her best race in the Acorn, and we turned her out for about 3 weeks and brought her back and just came back slow with her. And we ran into Dogwood at Churchill. And if Kofifi hadn't been in there, she won by 2.25 and set the stakes record by a full second. So she'd have gone into the Raven Run. She'd have been probably third or fourth choice.
Yeah.
Around 6 or 7 to 1. But since Kofifi was in there, and she beat us 8 lengths, but she came within 1/100 of a second of the track record that Groupie Doll set. You know, they kind of discounted my fillies. She's never really gotten a lot of respect the whole year, and she's done nothing but run her eyeballs out and been, to me, a great filly.
You know, and it's funny because I mentioned you were going to join us, and I was clanking around in my head when, you know, which of the stakes this year that I watched with you, and it was the Acorn, and, you know, even at 30 to 1, you didn't necessarily expect to win, but you did expect a better effort, and it just, you know, it really never really came together, but you regrouped and, you know, took a portion of the summer off at that point, and then went on to the Dogwood. I mean, the fact is she's run into virtually every hot 3-year-old filly all year long, including Break Even back in you know, on Oaks Derby Day.
Yeah, and ran a big race to be second there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's interesting because she was purchased as a filly with real potential, because $155,000 for Majestic Perfection at that point, you know, that was real money. I mean, talk about her development to get to this point.
Well, I picked her out at the Fancy Tipton Summer Sale 2 years ago, and she's just very athletic. So she's not the most correct filly in the world, but she's good enough. But she's very, very athletic looking. In fact, her sister I'm going out to look at right now is in the October sale at Patrick Tipton, getting ready to come up. So
very nice.
We got her. They go to Chesapeake Farm to start, then they go down to Chad Stewart in Florida to be broke. And then I get them up at, 2 years ago, last year was at Arlington, this year would be at Churchill. But she developed at Arlington Park. I got her, you know, probably around May or June last year, and we made her first start at Arlington, and she went off there. She'd been working fantastic. I mean, the works were in the form, too, 5/8 and 59, bullet work. And she goes off, I think it's 32 to 1 first time out, which made no sense to me. It was a nice field, but it was, you know, she had really nice works and had done nothing wrong. And when draws off and wins by 4. Then we come to Keeneland, and she wins easy in an allowance race, nay other than. And then we go down the Fairgrounds, and I was kind of hoping, we ran into Letlier, which was a sprint in December, and she wins that pretty handily. And then I was trying to get her in to see if she'd go a route of ground, because the 3-year-old filly, so I got to see if they can go a route of ground. And she kept getting sick on me. We had her entered a couple of times, we're getting ready to enter in the preps for the Oaks, and she just kept getting little naggy stuff that we had to just give her 2 weeks off or a week off, had her on antibiotics a couple times. So I end up, instead of running, we scratched out of all the prep races, and instead of just going straight to the Oaks, I decided to run her a mile on the turf and set her up for Keeneland. And she really wasn't even ready for the mile turf race, and she just dug in herself at the quarter pole, kicked in, and won impressively. I'm probably as proud of her that day as any day she's ever run.
Hmm.
And then we come here and run in the state going along here, and she gets off bad, which was okay with me because she kind of wants to sit behind, but we ended up being rushed up and going wide and heading head for the lead around the turn. And it just wasn't her type of race the way it's set up for. About a half mile pole, she kind of said, the hell with it, and Flo just kind of wrapped up on her. So then we go to Churchill for that race, and she redeems herself, runs behind break even. And then we go to the Acorn, and I don't know if it was the track, the shipping, or what it was. The shipping didn't seem to bother any. Maybe she just didn't like the Belmont racetrack. And I had no delusions about being 1-2. I was hoping to be third and thought I would be third, you know, because Garana and Serengeti Empress, I didn't know if we could beat them if we ran our race. So, but she wound up like sixth in there, and I was a little disappointed, so I turned her out for 3 weeks, got her back ready for the Dogwood, and then the Raven Run was our main goal. And that, it worked out well.
Now, and, you know, she's obviously, you know, the 7/8, she's got the 2 good seconds and now this win. So she really feels like, you know, that specialty type. And that's a nice commodity, frankly, I mean, because that's a, you know, it's obviously the filly and mare sprint distance. And, gosh, I think they're going to run. Wait a minute. When is that? When is the next Keeneland filly and mare Breeders' Cup sprint? Is it next year or the year after?
Next year, I think.
Next year. So she'll be a four-year-old.
It might be 3/4 then instead of 7/8, so I'm not sure what they'll do at Keeneland.
Well, what'd they do? Why? What'd they do?
Didn't it used to be 3/4? It's always been 7/8.
Always been 7/8 to differentiate from the sprint.
Is Gofifi going to retire?
That's a good question. Tell Mr. Lothan back to...
Because after we ran against her in the Dogwood, I said, I never want to see her again.
I'm trying to think. Who could Mr. Lothan back motivate to send her to stud? Maybe somebody gives the Roths an offer. I don't know. They love to watch their horses run, so maybe she will be back. You know, you bring up a great point. You think about it, Neil. Between this filly and Kafifi and Guarana and Break Even and Dunbar Road and even like Jeltran, this has been a good group of sprinting fillies this year.
Oh, yeah. It's a very tough group. I mean, this might be the toughest division there is. As far as, you know, being in the age group. And I mean, let's face it, Kofifi is going to be the favorite for the Breeders' Cup sprint against older mares.
That's right. That's right.
And she had to run in a non-graded stake at Churchill.
Yeah, that's right. Well, because they actually did some unusual things with her. And you know, looking at that Black Cat win, you know, you actually probably could take some paths less traveled yourself with her going forward. I should mention, of course, with Majestic Perfection, Brett Jones bred the filly out of a Street Crime mare, Street Mate. And
they actually had 2 horses in the race, Airdrie did, and they were sitting in the box right next to me and we were watching the race.
Well, they got to be happy over there. It's good for Majestic Perfection, and
they were very happy. I'm sure they would have rather won with their own, but they were very happy for me and very cordial and very polite. Congratulated me and seemed generally pleased that I'd won.
No, listen, Andy, that's one thing. Everybody's always happy to see you do well. And, of course, for Mr. Lothan back, too, who sends horses to you and to Ian Wilkes. And, you know, as a guy
Chris
that
Block, Joe Chris Block,
that's right.
He's put a lot of money in the game. And I'm sure not as much as the Arabs and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, he's put up quite a bit. And he's a great owner. And, well, there's four of us that train for him. And we all root for the other one to do well for it. There's no animosity between any of us. We all want – it's all about Mr. Lothenbach doing well.
Everybody raves. Everybody has – and now that he's retired and you know, is really – you know, he always was active. But now it seems like he really wants to enjoy himself and be fully involved. And he's been busy at the sales accordingly.
Yes, we've been – the last probably 3 years, he's bought quite a few horses at the sales. Plus, he breeds horses, too.
That's right. You'll see them on the breeders' line as well. And speaking of which, you've broken a couple of maidens for Lothenbach over the last month or two. And you had a Keeneland winner. I think it wasn't a 2 year old. I think it was a 3 year old.
There's a 3 year old gelding by the name of Tell Your Daddy. I'm sure that was named for one of his daughters.
I love it. What kind of horse? It's still time for him to make something of himself.
I think he's going to be on the improve. You know, he was kind of a butthole to train for a while, so we kind of got a handle on him now, and he's a gelding, which was, you know, that's another thing with Mr. Lothenbach. This was a scat daddy colt that he paid a couple hundred thousand for. And you call up and say, we need to geld him. He'll say, okay, go ahead. You know, there's not a lot of owners that'll do that.
Sometimes you can't make him into something unless you cut him. And right. even if he had a stallion's pedigree, having a useful horse is better than having a useful gelding is better than having a useless horse.
Yes, a useless colt. So, and if they can't run, they're not going to make stallions anyway. But
exactly.
That's helped this horse a lot, and he's getting better as we go along. I think you'll see by the end of the year, he'll be a pretty decent type of horse.
Nice. Kind of a turf miler type. What about that? There is a colt that we should talk about that also took a couple of tries to break his maiden, but looks to have upside, kind of sneaky upside. That distorted humor colt, Job Security, who just missed it at Churchill a few weeks ago.
Yeah, the first time he ran, if he's not careful, he's going to make a nice gelding one day, too.
Because he was an expensive horse.
He was running not to be a gelding when he broke his maiden. But he's kind of a horse that really hasn't turned the light bulb on yet. Everything he's doing just on his ability, not because he's putting forth a huge effort yet. And he's getting better each race. His first race, he went out there, and he came back as like he went out for a little jog and came back to the barn, didn't drink any water, didn't blow out a match. I mean, it's like he just went out and had fun, you know, played with the kids, came back in. Then his second race, that was a mile on the turf. His second race, I shortened him up to 7/8 on the dirt. And he laid back, and finally about inside the quarter pole, he decided to run a little bit. And he showed a little something, and he came running to finish 5th, I think it was. And then his next out, we ran him a mile and a quarter. And he won, looked like he was going to, got past in the stretch, looked like he was going to stop, and then decided, okay, I'll go ahead and go on a little bit. And he drew off and won that race. And then we came back in the other end, and they actually set the track record. It was the day after the stake where they almost set the track record, and then they set the track record in Jobs' race. But he's still learning. I mean, he's probably at 65-70% of his potential. And well, I think he has the chance to be a nice horse if he lets himself do it.
Well, and it's funny that I'm glad this horse came up too, Neil, because this was a horse that kind of had conversation about when he sold as a yearling. He was a $700,000 book one Keeneland yearling. He's out of that very nice AP Indy mare Serenading, and was really cut out. This is a Hillendale product, and you know, was really cut out to be a horse. So Mr. Lothenbach's being patient, and it sounds like you've been patient.
Well, he did tell me when we bought the colt, he was on the phone, and he said, your job depends on how this horse runs. Oof. So that's how he got named. I named him Job Security and told him he wasn't going to run until he was six. So with the name stuck, but I ran 3 years too early. I figured that at least give me 5 years of employment.
Such a character. It's unbelievable. Neil, I'm not going to let you go without a couple of conversations about eats, because I told everybody that you may be the foremost gourmand in the business, and give everybody a couple of favorites that they next time they go to fairgrounds, next time they come to Chicago or to Kentucky.
Well, let's see. Chicago, you have to go either to Bob Chin's or DeMarco's. Bob Chin's is a really good crab, crab legs, crab, a Dungeness crab, good shrimp. The seafood's just outstanding there, and their steaks are really good. And DeMarco's is an Italian place that's right off of 355, about 20 minutes from Arlington. It's excellent. New Orleans, you can list a bunch. My favorite would probably have to be a place called Brightson.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, you can't describe it. You have to go.
That's
the
also
sauces he uses and the flavor, it's just unbelievable. Butternut shrimp disc.
How about that's Amos's place, right? That's Frank Brightson, right? Is that
Yes, Frank Brightson. He's the owner and the chef, him and Marna. His wife own it, and Frank cooks, and it's not a big place. It's in an old house. Got three small rooms, probably with about eight tables in each room. And he's always in the top of everything as far as the quality of the food, the service. He's gotten the James Beard Award. He's gotten a Sovereign Award from Canada. I mean, it's just, I can't say enough good things about the restaurant.
I love it. And I'll give us another one in New Orleans.
Well, it's not in New Orleans. It's outside New Orleans, kind of off the beaten track, a place called Mosca. They originally came from Chicago, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's cash only, in case that doesn't mean American Express traveler's checks, as a friend of mine once tried to use. He thought, well, it's the same as cash. I said, not here.
not in Louisiana, it's not.
not here. So, but it's kind of a family-style place, but really good barbecue shrimp, hand-baked oysters, chicken, garlic chicken, spaghetti bordelaise. It's just, and it's a really nice place to go if you got, you know, three or four people you want to go with. We can get a little bit of everything.
Nice.
And then there's a place downtown New Orleans called Irene's. It's very good.
Spell Mouses again? How's it spelled?
Mosca's is M-O-S-C-A-S.
Mosca's. M-O-S. Mosca's.
C-A-S. That's their last name.
Mosca's. Interesting. All right. And Irene's we've heard of, too. I've not been to I never seem to be able to get to Irene. We always want to go, and we never get there. And then how about between Louisville and Lexington?
Lexington, the Merrick Inn is my favorite here. I probably go there four or five times during the meet. Louisville, they tell me what a great eating town it was. I have yet to see it. And they all get mad at me when I tell them that it's not that great. And they say, well, you're comparing it to New Orleans. I said, yep. I'm comparing good to good. And you all don't make the cut.
I don't know how well this is going to sit in the bill, but
I am a Lexingtonian, you know. I bleed blue, not red.
Oh boy, we're in trouble now. This can only end up with some hurt feelings somewhere.
Yeah, I hope I still get Sauls next year at Churchill.
Exactly. Well, you got Ben Huffman, so what's the you can't go wrong.
Oh, Ben's great. I wouldn't want his job.
That's for sure. No, there isn't anybody that. It's funny. We talked to Hammer, and he's teaching at this semester at University of Arizona, and the kids go out and they become racing secretaries. But I don't think they're completely prepared for what they got to deal with.
No, that's the two jobs on the racetrack I don't want is racing secretary and stall man.
I knew Stallman was going to be next. Neil, I couldn't wait to reach you today. I'm just delighted for you and for Mr. Lothenbach and the team. Bell's the one, and we'll look forward to seeing you somewhere along the way this fall or winter.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, we'll find something for it. Right now, the La Brea is kind of on the radar a little bit, but
nice.
Like I say, the goal originally was the Raven run, and we got there, and now we got to just see how she does from here and then decide.
Neil Pessin, everybody, and I don't know if you realize it, but with that win, it's your best year as a trainer in terms of earnings.
Oh, good. That means I've got money now.
Exactly. You didn't even know. Money you didn't know you had.
I went to the bank and I said, sorry. I don't know where it went.
Well, you should tell them, this is my best year as a trainer.
My best year. Where's my money?
Neil, a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Neil Pessin, everybody, as menchadic as they get, just terrific. And you got yourself, that's an elite list you just got, including in Chicago. The good job, Bob Shins and DeMarcos. Brightsons, you've heard repeatedly, and particularly from Amos. But Mosca's, that's a new one. That one, we're going to have to make an effort next New Orleans trip. And boy, they're not going to be happy when Neil's going to get booed next time he walks to the winner's circle at Churchill. See, it's funny because I've struggled in Lexington on the food side. But he said the American, so there we go. All right? Neil Pessin, what a fun morning. I knew it would be. Mike Welch. Johnny D, Nick Luck, ooh, John White. John, I'm sorry. John's in the green room. We'll get John tomorrow. Who else? There was somebody. Was there? What else? There was. What am I missing, Case? Who am I missing? I'm missing what. How did we had Welch and John? No, I guess that was it. I guess we didn't overload the docket. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Look, kind of a quiet Monday. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. The archive actually will be a little late today. Casey's got a couple of doctor's visits right now that he's got to head out to. All right? So late for archive. Talk to you in the morning. Thanks, everybody.
You have to go killing all the bees.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Play the Empire 6 at Belmont Park featuring daily payouts and a carryover jackpot. Best of all, it only takes 20 cents to take down the Empire. One unique winning ticket earns the entire net pool plus the jackpot carryover. Without a unique ticket, 75% is distributed to winners with 25% added to the jackpot. The Empire 6 consists of the final six races each race day at Belmont Park, and the next jackpot carryover mandatory payout is Sunday, October 27th. Learn more at nyra.com/Empire 6. The Empire 6, play small and win big.